coming up on this episode.
Tom goes back into his family's history all the way back to the grandparents' generation.
It was like being the zebra on the Serengeti when the lion is continually pacing the room.
Mostly the mother and the father argued over Lou's affairs. Dun dun dun.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections. Hosted by your two favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own ideas and thoughts about just what gives these works the narrative edge.
All right, Peter, so the topic of today's book is manhood. So I want to see footballs, I want to see power tools, I want to see grilled meats and big cars.
Okay, I'll bring all of that.
You're all about the manhood. So the topic of today's conversation is a memoir called In the Days of My Youth, I Was Told What It Means to Be a Man by Tom Juneau.
All right, who's Tom Juneau?
Well, Tom Juneau is an Atlanta-based writer. He writes for GQ, he writes for Esquire. He has written for those publications. He's now with ESPN, so manly publications. Atlanta Magazine called him the most celebrated magazine writer of his generation. And you might know him because Matthew Reese portrayed him in the movie It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Did you see that one?
I did not see that, no.
So that was about Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. And Matthew Reese portrayed a writer who was based on Tom Juneau. So,
oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So he's an Atlanta-based writer.
And this book is about his relationship with his father, or?
Yes, so, you might be aware that that film was about a relationship with the father, and this also is about a relationship with his father. It's really about Tom Juneau's father, very charismatic man, sort of a one-of-a-kind personality. He was a handbag salesman named Lou Janad, and the book is about sort of the lessons we can take from Lou Janad's life, the positive, the negative, and it's really a everyman's story about growing out of a father's shadow.
Hmm. Okay, and before we go any further, I want to ask about the name pronunciations you just did, because the author is Tom Juneau.
Tom Juneau.
But the father is Junod.
Yes, so he changed, the son changed the pronunciation of his name in college. He was taking a French class, and the teacher started pronouncing his name Juneau, and he said, I like it, I'm going to change it. And so when he changed the pronunciation of his name, all of his family was like, who do you think you are changing your name to something fancier? You're a Janad, not a Juneau, So it was all part of his growing out of the shadow of his father, which is, like I said, this is what basically was what's what the book is all about.
Mm-hmm. So he was a handbag salesman, you say?
The father was a handbag salesman.
And in real life, was that interesting? Or?
I think handbag salesman is probably the worst two words that I could use to describe Lou Janad.
Like a door-to-door handbag salesman?
No, this was in like a studio. Like they had handbag stores, but he would go in person to make sales as well. This was a very high-class profession. Like, women paid thousands of dollars. We're talking in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. This was another era. I mean, now you go get a handbag for, what, $12? I don't know. But back then, it was a very, very well-compensated profession, and Lou Janad was the king of handbag salesmen. He had a way with women. He could convince them to part with their money. And so that's how this family got, this New Jersey family got a house on the beach, had a house in Florida. They had cars. They were firmly in the middle class life.
Well, I'm very interested. I mean, we started this conversation talking about traditional aspects of masculinity, right? And handbag salesman, not a traditional marker.
It is if you want to make money and you want to be around women.
Fair.
And he liked women. We're going to get into that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm so curious about the kind of advice about what it means to be a man such a man would dispense. But anyway, you said he was a kind of a large personality?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it was his looks. He was very attractive, very well dressed, stylish, always with the latest fashion tips, and he would put lotions all over his body. He was what Tom Junot called professionally tan. he worked on the tan. And, you know, he carried himself in what I would call masculinity personified. He ate steak for breakfast. He worshipped the sun. I mean, you know, my father even worshipped the sun, and we would go and we put on these lotions. And back then, you put on lotions to, like, bring the sun in, not keep the sun out.
Wow.
Anyways, and so there's many, many stories about his masculinity. But let's start with one, the author, talking about the family beach house.
We had a house out in West Hampton Beach, Long Island, right by the water. And he would, you know, come into the little room, or the little bunkhouse where me and, you know, my brother and my friends would sleep. He'd be like, all right, get up. It's time to run the beach. And we would do that. We would have to go out and en masse. Whoever was there would have to go down and run the beach. And he'd be sort of exercising and doing these things. And then, you know, as a reward for running the beach, you'd go into the ocean. And my father would go in there and go, nectar of the gods. And you felt exactly that. It wasn't like you were like, this is ridiculous. You felt like you were lucky to be in that water, in his presence, in that sunlight. It was just it was a remarkable experience.
So part of, you know, that is his charisma, but part of it is kind of ridiculous too. I mean, nectar of the gods.
Yeah, that's quite a phrase to use about the ocean. I mean, it sounds like this kind of personality. First of all, it sounds like he's the original looks maxer in a way, right?
Yeah, I guess that's a term that we can use now.
But also seems a little overwhelming, no?
Yeah, I mean, especially growing up, you know, it's sort of an overbearing, overwhelming type of thing. And Tom describes what it was like to grow up in that household with such a big personality.
He took up all of the oxygen in the room. So, you know, it was like being the zebra on the Serengeti when the lion is continually pacing the room. And it was very much like that. That feeling, it was just almost a primal feeling of, for want of a better word, threat, even though the threat was undefined.
So threat, I mean, is he talking about violence there? Was there violence?
So Tom claims that his father only struck him once when he was in college, so older. But there was constant argument in the household when he was growing up as a child. The father and his mother, Fran, most of the time would argue, loud arguments, and, you know, he would, you know, be afraid for this. And mostly the mother and the father argued over Lou's affairs.
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of personality, I mean, seems like it's not super surprising.
Did you think that a book about a father-son reconciliation would not have family secrets, you know?
Wow. So what does the reader get out of knowing about these secrets, these affairs, especially if they took place in, like, the 50s, 60s, 70s?
Well, you know, affairs were just the beginning, so we're going to get...
they get worse than affairs.
We're going to get a lot in this book. So Tom goes back into his family's history all the way back to the grandparents' generation, and those, I guess you would call grand aunts. Do you call them grand aunts?
You can call them grand aunts, sure.
Anyways, he's going back into the 20s and the 30s. And so in this multi-branched family, in the course of this book, we are going to get a front page murder scandal. We're going to get mysterious deaths. We're going to get a mobster disappearance. We're going to get siblings that no one knew existed. We're going to get sexual exploitation, possible homosexual overtures, and lots of hanky-panky.
Okay. Usually that's the making of a pretty interesting book, I would say. So,
and
all
right. So why does all this matter, you say? I mean, I think this is an everyman story. It's an every family story. I mean, every family has secrets. My family has secrets that I don't even know about. Your family probably does too.
Some of us know. I can't say on this podcast. Some of us
know
the
secrets.
But,
you know, these secrets have the power to destroy families, but they also have the power to connect people and lift people up and empower them. And here's how Tom put that.
But the thing that my dad was very successful at making me feel was weak. And I felt, you know, I did not feel that I could match him in any sort of way. And yet I was contending with him, at least in my mind, since I was pretty young. And so knowing his secrets gave me a kind of power. And I must say that talking about his secrets right now still gives me a kind of strength. I have felt stronger as a person since writing the book.
And of course, like a good writer, he's going to unspool these secrets over the course of the book like a mystery. He's going to present clues at the beginning that will lead to answers at the end, and in between we'll get more clues, and it sort of unravels in dramatic explosions of plot twists, and it really keeps you going.
Yeah, so questions about what keeps you going, but I wanted to ask, so his father was dead long before he started revealing the secrets, right?
Well, he started figuring them out before the father died, and he did try to confront the father about some of these secrets, and the father gave away a little bit. So I would say this was a process that took decades. I mean, this is really a lifelong work for Tom Jeannot.
Yeah, well, you said this is an everyman's story. I will say what we just heard from Tom Jeannot about the father making him feel weak, like that definitely resonates with me in the sense that when my father was alive, right, he was never wrong. He was one of those guys, he was of the baby boomer generation who just could not show weakness in front of his kids. And that led to him feeling like he could never admit that he was wrong or apologize. I know there are lots of dudes who just can't apologize. And so when I see a title like this, right, in the days of my youth, I was told what it means to be a man. That's what I was kind of told, right? You don't apologize. And now that I have a son of my own, I'm like, that is not how you behave.
Yeah.
That is not how you, I mean, you say this is an everyman story. Is it your story too?
I mean, I I'm not going to discuss my father here.
Oh, come on. Why not?
I went into this book saying, no, I'm not going to discuss my father here.
How could you not think about your own father?
I do think about my own father when I read this book, but I'm not going to discuss it here.
Your father's still alive.
My father's still alive.
I can say whatever I want about my father. He's not listening.
Yeah.
Your father, however,
what I will
this.
Say, you know, I've already discussed a troubled childhood in my past, but what I will say is that this book really makes you think about your own past, present, and future.
Is that what kept you going, or was there something else that kept you going in this narrative?
Well, a lot of things kept me going. I mean, in the beginning, he raises questions, and some questions are on the page, and some questions were in my mind. And I'll just point out three questions that I had when you sort of begin this book. Number one, will Tom Jeannot repeat the mistakes of his father, Lou Jeannot? The father was a philanderer. He was with multiple women, cheating on his wife, causing problems. So will Tom cheat on his own wife, his college sweetheart, Janet? Will that happen by the end of the book? And if it does happen, what will happen next? That's one question. Another question, will Tom end up with siblings his father produced in one of his many affairs that he didn't know about? And if he finds the sibling, what's going to happen? And then finally, three, will he have anything to say about the current state of masculinity, which you were bringing up?
Will Tom have anything to say about the current
state
of masculinity?
Will this book address the state of masculinity? And I will say I was a little bit disappointed in that. You know, with all the issues that we have today, violence, self-harm, the manosphere.
Yeah.
What was the word that you used earlier?
Looks maxing.
The looks maxing, the bro culture. I thought he would sort of spell out those kind of things here, but maybe he's just sort of thought the story kind of spoke for itself. So when he came into our studio, I asked him, what does he think that this book has to say about masculinity today?
I don't very often pull back and analyze things. I never use the phrase toxic masculinity in the book. I barely even use the word abuse or trauma. I will say, though, that especially right now, where you see masculinity becoming a sort of a synonym for what it used to be, like this idea that like men don't have to apologize for anything. And that's what masculinity should be. It should be, it should allow you to sort of get away with things. My father definitely, I think, went through his life thinking he could get away with a lot and used his sort of masculine armor to do that. I have to say, though, that I don't think he got away with it. I think he did a lot of damage with that. You know, my father fooled a lot of people, especially men. Not so much women, but especially men. And they worshipped him. They were like his friends. They worshipped him. And you see this right now. There are just people who are out there being worshipped despite representing, in some ways, the worst of us.
So that's about all he has to say about the state of masculinity today. It's not in the book, but I got him to talk about it.
Man, you know, for all the discussion that's happening right now about what it means to be a man, I'm thinking of, have you heard any podcasts or anything by Scott Galloway?
No.
He's a very popular podcaster, and he has a few podcasts where he dispenses, you know, analysis of the news and also like financial advice and whatever. And he has some very strong views. I don't necessarily agree with all of them about what it means to be a man, but he is like out there giving, you know, firm advice about what he thinks, among them that, you know, men should be providers, men should be constantly improving themselves. So for a book to be titled, "In the Days of My Youth, I Was Told What It Means to Be a Man," well, what the hell were you told, man? What were you told?
He was told, you know, not to apologize. You can get away with anything. You can womanize. And I think the sexual portion of the book, you know, all of this sex, it was, you know, that's another thing. You know, he's being taught that your masculinity is tied to the women that you can take home.
Okay. Well, aside from the sort of disappointment there of not having more of that, like, was anything else disappointing, or were you?
Well, the book is very engrossing. It's dramatic. It's well researched. I mean, it's sympathetic to all concerned. I would say that the last part of the book gets very genealogical. He's going to like records into the past, and there's a lot of children and siblings. Like I said, it's this big tree of a family, and it just gets so overwhelming to keep track of, you know, who is this aunt and who is this uncle and who is that related to this person. But then again, this is not fiction, so he can't like simplify it.
Oh, sure he can. No, he definitely can, man. That's the essence of creative nonfiction in some ways. If you're not a purist, you can even have composite characters. If there are two people doing the job of one, you can do it.
In a nonfiction?
In nonfiction, you can. Creative nonfiction. I mean, there are schools of thought on that, right? There are the creative nonfiction purists, generally the journalists.
Well, this is not, I don't know. You're the literary, more of the literary expert here. I don't know what the difference is between creative nonfiction and a memoir.
I mean, memoir falls underneath the broad heading of creative nonfiction, right? And so you said Tom was a journalist, right?
Yes, he's a journalist.
Journalists tend to follow the journalistic standard where if someone existed, they better have said what you are quoting them as saying.
Yes, this is a very well-researched book.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and sometimes you can recreate conversations, for example. I don't know, does he do that in this book? Remember a conversation at word for word from,
I'm sure.
1960. So that's like an example of, okay, I don't remember the exact wording. I remember the essence. Some writers take it even further and make composite characters that they combine a few. Sometimes they put a note at the beginning saying they did so for the sake of dramatic effect. The disclosure is key. But yeah, I mean, we talked a few podcasts back about Tayari Jones and the character budget, right?
Well, he's definitely over budget on the characters here.
But in service of being journalistically truthful.
Yeah, that's a minor complaint, though. I absolutely recommend this book. It is masterfully written. It's got incredible detail. He doesn't just tell you what happened. He paints scenes. You know, you can smell the ocean, you can hear the ocean, and you can sense the tenseness in the room when the father's footsteps are walking around. It is a result of decades of work. I would say this is his magnum opus. You know, it gets you thinking about your own family background and the circumstances, you know, what led to this person to be the man that he is, what led to me to be the man that I am. And, you know, everyone can relate to the story. And the women emerge as heroes, I will say.
For a guy like this.
and it is sympathetic in the end. to all of the characters, but it pulls no punches, and I really appreciated this book.
All right, well, the book is In the Days of My Youth, I Was Told What It Means to Be a Man by Tom Juneau. Orlando, thanks for telling us all about it.
Thank you.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.